This is Steve Hackett, and you're listening to No Good Music.
Can you
hear? Yeah, I can hear you fine. Yeah. Very good.
So I'm Rob.
And my name's Matt. Good to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you guys.
So I'm gonna guess that you're in Dallas right now.
Yes, that's right. I'm in Dallas. We were in Boise this morning. I was up at 3 a.m.
A
Dallas snowstorm. Sorry, in a Boise snowstorm. I think we arrived here about lunchtime.
I did hear they're getting snowstorms.
So been an interesting day.
Wow.
Weird weather.
So we've been all over the place, all kinds of weather.
I don't know if you heard, we had an earthquake yesterday in New Jersey.
Oh, no. That's extraordinary, isn't it? So I was seeing stuff on TV, but I never found out where it was because every time someone spoke, it was.
Yeah, they say New York City, but we're really right near the epicenter.
Right.
Yeah.
It was Lebanon, New Jersey.
Okay.
I have a print shop in Clinton, which is 4.5 miles from Lebanon.
Right there.
So, the floor shook. I've never experienced an earthquake because I've always lived on the East Coast.
Funnily enough, I did once in England. There was one in Norfolk. And it's very, very rare, but that's what happened. It was in the middle of the night, and it was a very strange kind of effect.
Yeah.
Nobody harmed.
Anyway. Yeah. Thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day during the tour.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Pleasure. I know you have a show tonight in Dallas.
That's right. Yeah.
You got about 5 more shows on this tour, I think.
That's right. Yeah. We got some stuff in Mexico. Yes. We end up Guadalajara and Mexico City. A few more days in the States, mainly basically the South. I've been in the South for quite some time. So this is an interesting turn of events.
I was going to ask you why you haven't played New York or New Jersey. I would have loved to have gone to see your show.
Well, we did. Oh. Yeah. The truth is that this is an extension of a tour that started at the end of last year, basically. Well, it was from the autumn onwards last year. And so we'd covered those areas. And we wanted to try and explore areas that we hadn't done for a while. The South, but we will be back. We'll be back next year.
Okay.
The nearest we got, we get to do. Let me see. I think we get to do Tucson and one or two other places. Yeah, Austin, Dallas, Austin, Houston, or nearby, and off to Phoenix and all of that.
The Southwest,
that end of things. Yeah. So, but we're not trying to cover everywhere. That's the thing. We're trying to do some places that we haven't addressed for a while. So normally every tour will take in New York, it'll take in LA. And when we come back, of course, yes, we'll do those centers.
Mm-hmm. Is this tour different than last year's tour? Because this one is Genesis Revisited. It's Foxtrot, the Genesis Outback 50.
Well, that's right. Yeah, the last one was Foxtrot, but as I say, playing different areas, playing that classic album, also doing stuff off my new album, which is The Circus and the Night Whale, which has taken off big time in Europe. And but you know, when I play it here, quite a few people seem to know it, and it lends itself well to live performance. I'm happy to say, it doesn't feel like I'm doing it just for the sake of the fact that it's new. We do three tracks straight off from the new album.
I was going to ask you if it was just from the Genesis.
First half is my stuff that's just, it went to the top of the rock and metal charts in the UK, Circus on the Night Whale, the new album.
Nice.
So it's not all Genesis. It's first half is me, second half is Genesis, because I figure it's nice to keep the museum doors open for the glorious old exhibits, but it's also good to be vital and be doing new stuff that fans like and gets to chart and all the rest. So I'm heartened by that. I'm still motivated to do new stuff. That's the main thing, and a variety of new stuff too, not just one genre, but lots of different types of things.
I always think the UK, their like top 40 is kind of eclectic. More the US, we're kind of embarrassed with our top 40.
Yeah, we talk about that regularly.
Really?
I listen to your album. It is incredible. I think, I mean, I like progressive rock, but this is not many progressive rock. Maybe there are progressive rock bands still out there, but this album is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
I feel, and it needs to be heard.
Well, I'm glad you like it. That's why I'm doing stuff from it. And as I say, I'll be touring it over here. Then I'll be going to Europe with it, and some highlights from Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. So I'm trying to sort of address both things, both the new stuff and the old stuff. So I'm not hiding the new stuff.
Yeah.
Neither am I denying people the possibility of checking out the Genesis classic John Lennon approved stuff.
Tell us about that.
We got to throw John the Beatles Lennon in there.
Oh well, there's a story album. There that Lennon gave a couple of interviews and mentioned Genesis, and the last one that I heard about was one that he said he thought that Genesis. You've got to remember, this is Genesis. Circa 1972, 73.
Yes.
Wow.
He said he thought we were true sons of the Beatles. That's how he saw it. So I had that in the back of my mind when I was doing this new album, thinking I always felt that once the Beatles were doing stuff, the multi-track stuff that was experimental from the mid-60s onwards, they were taking a kind of pan-genre approach to pop. And they opened the doors for all sorts of stuff from then on. And, you know, we're still talking about it all these years later. But if ever a band was doing things that were a film for the ear rather than the eye, it was the Beatles. You have to remember it's a pre-video era where the songs started to become supremely visual and increasingly based on story rather than perhaps
and connected
the mating the theme, ritual theme. Based stuff that they
theme driven
and inclusive music all of that inclusive music including what would become called prog down the line, but I like to think of it as inclusive music. So I tend to work with musicians from all over the world, but that doesn't mean to say that I class myself under world music. It's just that I've made a lot of friends over the years touring, and some of them come from as far away as Azerbaijan, Tajikistan, India, Armenia, and I get to work with them or instruments from those places on various projects, Vietnamese instruments, stuff from South America, the charango that I've used from Peru. So it's not all, people think of progressive, that means Hammond organ and mellotron exclusively. It's not that. We kind of use everything. I've worked with orchestras. I've worked with people from all over. And I love all kinds of music, classic, whatever you will. But I think, the breadth of approach that the Beatles, that's what drives me to do something that, like the current album, to make it accessible, but also to base it on narrative and story, but not to stick around too long on any one thing before it changes. So you get soundscapes that drift in and out, move on.
for some of our listeners who weren't even born back then, you know, this is the shift from, you're talking about the Beatles, rock four-piece band, She Loves You, Yeah, 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 to stuff that's just unbelievable. I can't even imagine it, and I didn't imagine it, but they were bringing that up. That's what you're talking about, going from that basic rock, that basic four-piece to like, wow.
Orchestrated.
Yeah,
that's right. They were working with instruments and musicians from all over the world in the end. Right. And, you know, from the world of jazz, from raga, Indian raga, so many things, classical musicians, but not always in a straight classical way. If they were using violins and trumpets and all this kind of stuff, it was often in a very experimental kind of way. And I also think music became less formula then. I think because they had the world's ear and they were aware that they could basically do anything.
Oh, yeah.
It seems to me that the legacy that's handed on is the idea that we should all be able to do exactly what we want without worrying about fitting formats and all the rest. So, you know, the Beatles earned their spurs twice. First by capturing our hearts and minds when we were about 12, and then later on completely reinventing themselves, having the maturity to put down their own instruments at times and let other musicians take over in order to explore the songs and the narratives and the whole kind of musical, not just the Magical Mystery Tour, but the odyssey that they took us on, where we would hear things and think, what the hell is that? What is that? And I think that's the job of music even now. What the hell am I listening to? And and what fun that is, because I don't know it and I'm being saturated with new information. And I think that's a wonderful position to be in. I mean, I remember hearing I'm the Walrus in the mid-1960s on the radio, a little tiny mono radio in our kitchen at home, and thinking, wow, that was extraordinary. Who was that? Only to find out later that was the Beatles.
Yeah.
You
know, back and out.
Yeah.
And how many bands today do you hear and you go, wow, that was brilliant, only to find out it was your old friend.
Someone that you know.
So often. So music, I get so annoyed about this, that music has lost its sense of adventure and its ability to surprise. I want to be, you know, I want my ears to be hijacked by musical terrorists, but only in music. But nobody dies in music.
Have fun. It sounds great. Nobody dies.
That's right. Nobody dies. You can fire off salvos, fast runs. Nobody dies. You can experiment. You can fall asleep to that, or you can be thrilled by it. Say, this isn't quite my thing. What I prefer is bluegrass. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. That exists. America has always had these choices, whereas I think England, the British charts, unfortunately, it's not as if there's a soul chart, there's blues, blah, 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 blah. I mean, there is to some degree. That's why I'm saying, you know, this new album of mine went to the top of the rock and metal charts. But I think over here, you know, you always had that sense of there was the country charts, it was Billboard, it was the country charts, it was the soul charts, you know, the rock and pop stuff. So you've always had a wider thing here. But I suspect that the people that are the heroes within these various genres don't step outside or won't cross the line that much, but you get it every now and again, and it's wonderful when it happens. Music should be fun. It shouldn't be tightly formatted, and programmers should be going, where the hell do I class this? You know, we can't play this on our station.
Then they won't play it.
Why you should.
Exactly, and they won't play it because of that.
But people will find it and they will hear it because of social media, because good stuff will rise to the surface. And then it means that, you know, mainstream stations are behind the times, as happened many years ago. You know, when I have to mention the Beatles again. We had the most successful album in the world that's turning on all these young kids as we were then, with Sgt. Pepper and Revolver and what have you. And the BBC refused to play Sgt. Pepper. You heard it everywhere, in the street, everywhere, except on British radio, which was behind the times, which gave way to the pirates, pirate radio, until Britain eventually moved with the times and the anti BBC was unseated, outclassed, outpaced because listeners wanted the good stuff.
And give them what they want.
that's what they go. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So it's interesting, all of that. So yeah.
We were just talking
everything's
about
contemporary for me.
About YouTube, how they're, you know, with MTV used to have the play the videos all the time.
Turn your TV on, there's MTV on already, and you're watching all these videos. You can't just do that with you know.
I mean, maybe it exists, but I was like, with YouTube, why doesn't YouTube incorporate a music channel that puts all the new videos, no matter what they are? So people can, I mean, you have to kind of search this stuff out.
Feeding you the stuff that you don't know you want yet. Feeding you the new stuff that you don't know about yet. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
and it's
that should be the job of media, or else it's, let's just have, you know, the old guys again. Let's just have the Stones again. And nothing wrong with that. You know, I was a huge fan, you know, of, of what's now considered the mainstream, but you know, when I was a young kid, we'd never really heard blues. We didn't have that, you know, the ancestor of rock as we know it. But then all these extraordinary sonic developments happened within that genre. Guitars that learned to scream and cry and sustain and dive bomb and all of that. Without blues, that wouldn't have informed rigid pop as it was. But I think each era has got exciting music. People were doing exciting music from the 1500s onwards, the Baroque era. Yeah. I mean, you know, Bach, Scarlatti, Handel, these guys, and then onwards to the Romantics and all those Russians that knew how to write a damn good tune and Grieg and all of that. We had a few good ones in England, but I think it was mainly the Russians that seemed to have these extraordinary uses of piano and harmony and orchestra. And these guys could really orchestrate to get a combination of that. Ravel orchestrating Mussorgsky, who wasn't professional, and doing this extraordinary job on pictures at an exhibition, not just an ELP album, but the stuff that's all based on. Yeah, classical stuff, there's a room for it. I think film is probably the place where you get, you know, modern classical stuff coming up. It seems to be there are filmmakers who are brave, and there are guys who do music for film that are brave as well. I've heard a lot of really, really great stuff, usually just supporting the movie. Not, I don't mean the hit song at the end of the of the deal,
the
after the team has won the race, and just soundtrack. You know,
most people don't listen to what's going on in the background. I mean, there's a lot of visual going on.
I think, you know, all those heavyweight epic movies always need to have a heavyweight epic orchestral score. So you've got all that stuff, you know, the John Williams stuff for Star Wars. So you've got all this futuristic stuff going on, but then you've got, you know, you've got traditional instruments. Mm-hmm. It's traditional orchestra doing this stuff every time those spaceships whiz past your head as they go down the aisle. You know, it's you're hearing the sound of cellos and basses and all these deep, deep sonic things without any edges to them. You know, a bass guitar can be brilliant, and but you know, rock has sharp edges, whereas you get, you know, with bass effects with orchestras, there's a sort of sense of infinite bass because there is no edge to it. It's like space itself.
Right. So those lower frequencies are taking you with that ship.
Sure. Absolutely. All of that. Yeah. Infinite, deep space, sonic sounds, or music can be as light as a feather accompanying music, but it's at the underscore, it's all the things that people aren't saying, but they're actually feeling as they're interacting with each other on screen. So it's the nearest thing to telepathy we've got watching that story. But I've only done film music very, very occasionally, usually for documentaries, because I suspect that, you know, people most of the time when they want a rock guy to do a score, you know, then usually after, yep, We want the hit song that goes with blah, 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 blah.
Maybe and we're getting someone else to do horror movie directly. Or something.
Horror movie, yeah. Loads of my stuff is perfect for horror movies.
So I want to ask you with the tour, why Foxtrot? Yeah. That has to be maybe because it has to mean a lot to you.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've done any other tours with other Genesis albums, but
I have. Well, let's put it this way. As I say, you know, John Lennon picked up on us just when we started to tour the States 50 years plus ago. But I think Foxtrot and Selling England by the Pound, you've got a five-man group. Mm-hmm. And Peter Gabriel was the lead singer. Phil Collins was largely singing backup to him, but they had similar voices in a way. They're both powerful rock singers. But I think, you know, Foxtrot and Selling England by the Pound from 1972 and 1973, for me, that's the golden era of Genesis, really, because there's not really a weak track on either of those two albums. I think perhaps before it and after it, you'd get some, no doubt, great stuff, but there'd be those moments of what I think of now as padding that I would cheerfully leave behind certain things. You know, we did a double album that followed.
Like fillers.
Well, yeah, I think less than classic, I would say. You know, so the best of Lamb, which I'll be doing next year, makes a very tidy single album. The rest of it, lots of experimentation. You know, The Waiting Room, Silent Sorrow and Empty Boats, very poetic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, they are bits essentially of program music. They are they are telling the story, shall we say. But memorable tunes, I think you have to look at certain things. That's why that era I like, or Foxtrot particularly, because it kicks off with science fiction. It goes through lots of changes. It includes Supper's Ready, which is this great long piece that all the proggers seem to like. And at the time when we were doing it, nobody was calling us prog. It was progressive, wasn't being used. That was a term that was been used to describe free jazz in the 1960s, which bled into the 1970s. The term first came up in the early 1900s, with Richard Strauss talking about Edward Elgar, the term progressive. Then it fell into disuse, this term. Mm-hmm. And I hate to take you through the history of all this, but, you know, I was just reading something that a friend sent me about progressive, saying, well, these bands that are successful, who are basically progressive, but don't want to be known as progressive because they know there'll be a limitation. They're talking about Muse. And I think Moon Safari, there were some other bands, possibly Elbow, other British bands, mainly European. But it's a shame that bands have to be kind of classified.
Right. But you've got a descriptive term, progressive, just, you know, hence, just like the word alternative came about for alternative, you know, punk, alternative, new wave. You know, it's a descriptive term, progressive, as alternative is.
Well, and that's interesting. I remember the comedian Barry Humphries was talking about alternative, because alternative was being used to describe all sorts of things, particularly comedy. And he said, does that mean that to be alternative, you have to be funny every other day?
And I thought it was interesting. I get it.
Does that have to be engaging every other day, and we're allowed many misfires. So no piece of music is gonna thrill everybody. It just isn't going to happen. But hey, you could have a damn good go at it, you know, with long form. I still love albums. The new one is kind of a perfect length for a vinyl album. I didn't realize it was so short. Normally I do albums that are about an hour or maybe even a little bit longer sometimes. And this one came in at 45 minutes. And I thought, well, am I shortchanging people? But actually, yes, it will fit on vinyl either side. And
there you go.
With all the resurgence of interest.
That's not the shortest. I mean, there's albums that are 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
But if it's on vinyl, just right, that's great. But, 45.
That's right. Well, that's the thing. You see, you could say that music shouldn't be judged by the yard, you know, or by the minute. It's if it thrills and it's and it's the perfect length for vinyl, then that's fine. But, you know, yeah. Of course, all formats have to be addressed. So, yeah, we do. Mm-hmm. CD, Blu-ray, download. It's probably going to be an Atmos of it. Didn't have time to do it before we got on tour, but because response to it has been strong, probably going to do that. And then move on to new stuff, of course, writing while we're on the road, which is what I like to do a lot. I'm sometimes recording on the road as well.
So is there going to be a DVD of this tour? Are you recording?
There will be a DVD. Yeah. There will be. We're doing a Royal Albert Hall show in the UK. And so because we've had Foxtrot, I've already done Foxtrot at 50, a DVD of that. So that's already done and it's out there and mixed rather wonderfully by Chris Lord-Alge, I have to say. So the next show that we're going to film will feature these highlights from Landmines Down on Broadway, plus the live versions of The Circus and the Night Whale, this new stuff, where one or two things get to expand beyond the versions that are on the album, particularly a track called These Passing Clouds, which is, it's quite short, but it's developed into something where I get to sort of get to do a sort of question and answer thing with Rob on soprano sax, so that the guitar gets to take it, but then it goes off into an area that's sort of jazzier. Then I kind of bring it back to rock, but a mixture between the two, these hybrids that I keep trying to explore.
Mm-hmm. Of your new songs that you're performing now live, it's kind of a cliche question, but what are you really enjoying? You know, what gets you there, like while you're playing? Okay. Do you have a favorite? Is what I'm trying to say now. If you're on tour,
yeah, I'm really enjoying the first three songs. Normally, when we do new stuff, I have to say, you know, some of the most difficult things I have to do is to play new music to people because it doesn't have the benefit of being, it's not bedded in with, it's not part of the audience experience.
Right.
No, it's not part of your life. It can't affect in the same way that the emotional calendar is described in a particular song that you heard because you were with a particular friend, whatever you were going through at that time. But I love the fact that people are hearing this new stuff for the first time and responding to it immediately because it's music that's full of surprises. So the first two tracks, People of the Smoke, which is about London. The Smoke is a nickname for London, particularly when I was growing up, when it was heavily polluted and smoky and all the rest.
I love that song. The video, too.
Yeah, it's great. Video.
Yeah, the video came out really well. Paul Gosling did the video, and it came out very well, very, very descriptive. I think he called the spirit of it, you know, of something that starts literally in 1950 with samples of what was going on radio then, the soundscape of here's some snippets of the BBC, the way things sounded, adverts, the way things sounded, and steam trains, the way they sounded, and then the voiceover from the BBC from an old show called Listen with Mother, which then became Watch with Mother as it was taken on to BBC TV. But you had, you know, the woman's voice saying, "Are you sitting comfortably?" And then there'd be a long pause. "Then I'll begin." The idea that kids had to sort of sit down and behave.
Yeah, get the pillows. Is that your pillow? I need my pillow.
That's right. Yeah. All that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Are you sitting comfortably?
So I love the fact that, you know, we go through the soundscape and the baby crying and everything and the steam train, blah, 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 all of that.
I love that. Kind of I love that beginning.
Then we go to the other thing, which is it's rock, but then there are orchestral moments within it or orchestral melodies within it. And because it's a track that's full of surprises, it's essentially it's rock. But I think, you know, to take people through a number of trapdoors at the beginning, so you don't really know what you're going to hear next and where it's coming from, is all part of the adventure of it. So I've done soundscape before, but this one, I think it typifies the era more and raises a smile. So, yeah, the kids singing the they were known as the Ovaltinies. There was this product called Ovaltine.
I know,
which was reckoned to be good for you.
Yeah, we had it here. Yeah,
you had all that over. Yeah, over here. Okay,
late '70s, I believe.
Oh well, you see now the thing is, I think that ad, the girls singing at the beginning, the kids, it goes right back to the 1930s. And someone was saying to me that their mother, a guy in the crew, said, "Yes, my mother, when she was growing up, she was an Ovaltini too. So she had a badge and was part of the club and all of that." You know, so
they love their clubs. We're not talking about then.
The Mickey Mouse Club and Disney and all that. We're talking about, you know, how it was, you know, back in the war. Everyone being very grateful to be alive and all the rest.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Steve. I know we only have 30 minutes with you, but I'm so grateful you could take the time.
Thank you.
I saw you on...
It's been great talking to you guys.
Yeah.
I saw you on an interview by Derek Higgins. It was like a month ago.
Okay.
I loved that interview, and I wanted to talk... We wanted to talk to you, so...
We're great. Well, thank you very much.
So people can find you at hackitsongs.com.
That's it. Website. Yes. That's
okay.
Steve, is there anything else that you're thinking of that you didn't get to say about the tour, about the album?
No, not at all. It's great talking to you. I have a sound check that I have to run to fairly soon. So
yes.
It's a busy life. It's all crazy. But
Thank you great so much.
Are you guys based in... Are you based in New Jersey, did you say?
Matt's in Pennsylvania. Matt's about 40 minutes away from me, but
Near
Bethlehem, you mentioned Allentown. The earthquake. Right.
Yeah, the epicenter of the earthquake. That's where we're at.
I'm in Washington, New Jersey.
Okay, well, be safe. Thank you. I can say.
And have a good rest of the tour.
Have a great evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to No Good Music. Today's interview was produced and edited by Rob J. Lilly and recorded via Zoom at the Did You Say
7
Studios in Washington, New Jersey. You can find No Good Music on Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Spotify, Pandora, and almost anywhere you listen to podcasts. Exit music by the band 99%. The songs Taking You Down, Circus Inferno, People of the Smoke, and Wherever You Are. Used with permission from Steve Hackett.